welcome to Season 7, Episode 36 of the Ubuntu Podcast. In this episode, we'll interview Dr. Lucy Rogers about hacking dinosaurs, and we'll read your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat thing on the website and in the hash UUPCIRC channel. I'm Tony, and joining me this week are a full complement of Alan.
Hello.
Mark.
Full complement of Alan.
Yeah, full complement of Alan.
No half measures this week.
Alan, the glass is half full, Pope. Mark.
Hello.
And Laura.
Hiya.
How are we all doing, folks?
Not too bad.
Awesome.
Yeah, excellent.
Oh, good, eh?
Mm.
Why are you so awesome, Alan?
Everything is awesome. I went to Turkey yesterday, and I've never been to Turkey before. I went to Istanbul, and it was lovely. It was really nice.
Excellent.
Cool. Did you eat a lot of kebabs and drink a lot of coffee?
No, I didn't. It was a Dell event. I may have mentioned the one in London I went to recently.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was a Dell promo thing where they get all their partners along and some of their customers as well to show off some of the stuff. And we had a stand there.
Cool.
And we've been doing them all around Europe. There was one in Munich as well yesterday that David Planella went to because he lives there. So
lots of good feedback.
Yeah, it was good because we had a Dell PC on the stand that they put one on every stand that's got Windows on it. The first thing I did was put a USB key in and wipe it and put Ubuntu on it. And so I did a clean install of Ubuntu and it just worked on this Dell 18-inch hybrid tablet PC thing.
Wow.
Ooh, cool. Did the touchscreen work?
Yes.
Nice.
It all just worked.
Nice.
It was brilliant. And So people were dropping by, and a lot of them were actually people who worked for Dell and who'd not seen Ubuntu for a long time. You know, it's just not within their sphere of work.
So they said, what's happened to GNOME?
Well, no, a lot of them said...
Why are the buttons on the wrong side?
quite the contrary. They said things
like... Oh, lovely Windows.
They said things like, oh, wow, this looks better than the last time I tried it.
Brilliant.
Okay.
So, yeah. And, loads of interesting stats about how much it's used in various places. But loads of customers coming by and talking to us. And,
cool.
Yeah, it was really, really good.
Nice.
There's a few occasions where someone would walk up and start talking to me and I say, oh, I'm really sorry, I only speak English. And they just walk away because I don't speak Turkish. Because, unfortunately, our translator was ill. So she couldn't come. So, but there were plenty of people who did speak English and we could talk to. It was really good.
Excellent. What about you, Mark?
I got a new phone because I left my old one on the bus.
Ooh, rookie mistake. Yes. Do you have a piece of software on your phone that will lock your phone?
Oh, yeah, yes. That's really good on Android, isn't it?
It'll
help you find your phone.
Google device.
Yeah,
thing.
As long as it's online. But I also have a separate piece of software which will let your phone, you can text your phone and make it put itself online. But I didn't know that you could text it until it was already dead. But anyway, so yes, I now have a OnePlus One. Which is
what is that?
Is that a two?
Which is
a number two.
Which is a phone which
it's that noise again.
Which you get, which you can get running CyanogenMod out of the box.
Oh,
which is
cool.
Quite good. Yeah. So
So did you have to get an invite for one of these?
No, they did a very brief period of pre-orders.
Oh, it was if you're pretty and blonde enough, big breasts. Oh,
did you ever put a t-shirt? Selfie.
Oh, yeah, that's obviously why I got it. No, they
put someone else's picture
quite
up,
quickly.
Did they really do that?
They were talking about doing it, and then people said, "What?" And then they were like, "Oh no, that was a rogue employee."
No, yeah. No, yeah. They didn't talk about doing it. They actually did
it
on the forums.
They actually
the
started
thread
doing
was
it,
very
yeah.
long with people posting selfies of themselves.
Wow,
trust me.
Oh, you spent a very long time looking at it, but yeah. So it's quite a nice it's quite a nice
it's quite
phone,
big.
But this is the thing.
Did you have to buy new jeans to put it in the pocket because it's quite big?
No, it does fit in my pocket.
Okay,
it's got
but
big
yes,
pockets.
For the spec, it's really quite cheap. The
first
battery
thing.
Life is amazing.
How much?
That is the 64 gig model, and it was about £270, I think. And
okay.
the 16 gig model is about £230. But it's also got like 3 gig of RAM and a quad core processor, and it's quite hefty.
It's quite a monster, isn't it?
And
I love the feel of the back.
It's
kind of
very,
rough,
very sort of yeah.
So very much unlike the Nexus 4.
Yeah, it doesn't walk across the table,
slide across any table. Yeah.
But yes, the battery. I took it off charge at 5 o'clock on Monday. It's now 9 o'clock on Wednesday, and it's got about a quarter of the battery left.
Oh, okay. That's a reasonable battery life.
Yeah, this is with me. You know, it's a new phone, so I've been screwing around with it for the past 3 days as well. So, yeah, really quite a nice phone. I'd highly recommend it. And they're doing some sort of Black Friday thing as well. I don't know whether that just means they're selling them or they're doing a deal on the accessories. But if you're interested in getting one,
get your t-shirts on.
Because, yeah, they're not very easy to get hold of.
Excellent. Laura, have you been doing anything you want to tell us about?
Nah.
Okay.
What about you, Tony?
Well, I'm very pleased to say that the latest Big Finish box set that I did the photography for, the Doctor Who Audio Dark Eyes 3, was released. Uh-huh. And there are all sorts of pictures that I took on the CDs and the cover.
Can you listen to your photographs then, if you buy this box set?
No.
No, you can listen to the MP3s and sit and look at the CDs.
Right.
Yeah. It's actually, you know, another interesting little shoot. Yeah.
Do you buy a copy of everything that you've had printed?
Well, in this case, yes, because I'd pre-ordered it before.
I pre-ordered it not knowing that your photo was going
to
be up.
Yeah, before I was asked to do the photography for it.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah. But
you know for next time.
Well, yeah.
You never know, do you?
Yeah, hindsight and all that.
But, so does that mean they're going to send you a free copy, which we can give away on the show?
They haven't sent me a free copy of this one yet. No.
So when people ask to see your portfolio, do you just tell them to go down to WH Smith's and have a look at the audiobook aisle?
Yeah. Bigfinish.com is the place to go. Yeah. Yeah, but that's really quite cool.
That is very
excellent.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really well done.
Should we get on with the show?
Yes.
So we're talking to Dr. Lucy Rogers, and hopefully she's going to talk about the Black Gang Pie Hack Day, and at least maybe tell us what it's about.
Oh, hello, Lucy.
Hello.
So what's the Black Gang Chine Hack Day? Pie Hack Day?
Say it fast.
Yeah.
The Black Gang Chine. You know, no, you're quite right, the Black Gang Pie Hack Day. Black Gang Chine is the UK's oldest theme park. It's based on the Isle of Wight off the south coast of the UK. And many years ago, 175, I think they're coming up to, they had a chine, which is like a waterfall. It's the local name for a waterfall.
Wow, and never knew that.
There's two things already.
I've been there so many times as a kid and I never knew that's what it comes from. Thank you.
The Victorians would go and have a look at this very pretty waterfall. And then other themes got added and it became a theme park. It's now run by the fifth generation De Bell, Alexander De Bell. And he asked me to come over and hack his dinosaurs.
Okay, yeah, I had somebody request that of me the other day.
So what's your connection to Black Gang Chine and why dinosaurs?
I used to live on the Isle of Wight, and I have met the managing director, Alexander De Bell, quite a few times. He knew that I liked hacking things. In the 70s, Black Gang had a load of fiberglass dinosaurs airlifted in by helicopter.
Awesome.
And this was all followed by Blue Peter. So in the early 70s, if you watch children's TV, you would have heard about these fiberglass dinosaurs being airlifted in. It was, it was in the Blue Peter annual. And it was a huge thing. There was a Tyrannosaurus Rex, there was a Stegosaurus, there were many others. And so Black Gang became renowned for its dinosaurs. The whole of the Isle of Wight is actually renowned for its dinosaurs. It's full of fossils. Mm. You can go along the beach, and I think 5 out of 10 times I'll pick up a fossil going along the beach at Black Gang, or further along some of the south coast.
Wow!
So it's still very renowned for its fossils, dinosaurs. There are dinosaur footprints. Yeah, it's a great place for fossil hunters.
So when you're hacking, I can't understand what you would hack on a dinosaur. Tell us more about this dinosaur hacking.
Okay, so the fiberglass ones were getting a bit dated, and they have got some animatronic dinosaurs now. So these dinosaurs move. There are subwoofers under the platform, and when the T-Rex, who it looks very, very lifelike, it is life size, it's covered in a latex sort of material, and when he growls the whole platform wobbles that you're on.
Oh wow.
teenagers run away scared. it is absolutely petrifying and great fun. However, some of the electronics didn't work, and if there was a problem, maybe water got in. The manufacturer was in China, and so getting new parts had a long lead time. Mm-hmm. Also, the dinosaurs did a pre-programmed set of movements. For example, it would open its mouth, it would roar, it would wag its tail, it would move its head. Mm-hmm. But they didn't always do it in the order that the staff at Black Gang wanted.
Right.
These dinosaurs, they can be tricky beasts.
Yeah. you don't want a dinosaur wagging its tail when it should be roaring. I say this a lot. it doesn't look right. And we know exactly what they're meant to be doing. So one of the staff there, Mark Butler, actually managed to hack one of the dinosaurs using a Raspberry Pi and get the dinosaur working again. He was waiting. It was middle of the busy summer six, and they couldn't wait for the part to come from China. And so he managed to fix it using a Raspberry Pi. He had never programmed before. He completely taught himself Python and managed to get this dinosaur working, which is absolutely wonderful.
Wow.
But they wanted more of the staff to know about it and how to use it. So I went along using Node-RED, which I had learnt not too long ago, with the wonderful Andy Stanford Clark had helped me through setting up Node-RED on a Raspberry Pi.
What's out of interest? I've never heard of Node-RED. What is Node-RED?
Node-RED is a very simplified method of programming that you can take blocks from the left-hand side and drag them across your screen. So one might be the inputs. You can drag it across your screen, link it up to another block that says an output, and tell, you know, pin one on the Pi. If you get an input of pin one, do this to pin two.
Right, that makes sense.
So like a graphical workflow tool.
Like Scratch kind of thing.
I haven't used Scratch. <Okay. laughs>
it sounds like what you've just described.
You wire all the bits together.
Right.
Yeah, you just put links between them. It's very, very simple for a non-programmer to begin programming.
Awesome.
And very, very powerful as well. So
and your background's as an engineer rather than a software.
I'm a mechanical engineer.
Yeah.
Right.
So software and electronics was all a bit on the scary side.
So you're introducing them to a load of new stuff by the sound of it. I mean, there's the Raspberry Pi initially that I guess some of them have never seen before, but then there's also this new software. How did they take to it?
I invited a lot of people from the Isle of Wight, as well as the staff. Some had used it, some hadn't. Some were web programmers, some wrote games. Some were just interested in the techie stuff. And I I brought together a whole community rather than just saying to the staff, here's what we can do. Mm. But by the end of the first day, they saw how simple it was to program using this Node-RED. And by the end of the second day, they had a dinosaur doing exactly what they wanted it to do. That's so their program.
Was the idea just to basically get... Yeah, there was a specification of what the staff wanted the dinosaurs to be able to do, and getting that actually to happen, or was there sort of were people adding their own sort of creative elements to it, where they were just coming up with ideas for cool things which would be cool to have an animatronic dinosaur do as well?
That's an interesting question. So we started with let's get some traffic lights working mm-hmm. on the Raspberry Pis. And I had some switches, and we could say, oh, look, this input works, that output. So that's where we started on the first day.
Right.
And some people, those with the web interest, actually got the switch changing web pages for them. Hmm. Someone had it moving the mouse around. Someone had hacked into a voice system and put a voice out on a speaker saying, I am a dinosaur. So before we actually even started, and we had some 6-foot dinosaurs, so the baby T-Rex was in the room with us, and that's what we could hack. And I had invited an electronics engineer, James McFarlane, across with us, and he managed to reverse engineer a lot of the electronics to say, ah, yes, well, if we're going to use Raspberry Pi, we don't need that and we don't need this. And if we do it this way, we can just do it all with 3.3 volts. And so his electronics actually made using the Pi so much simpler. But the staff really just wanted to see, okay, what can we do? Okay, we can now use the PIR sensor, the infrared sensor. When someone walks past, I want it to wag its tail. I want it to roar. And then I can put a random thing in. Mm-hmm. So that's as far as we got by the second day. We know we can control it, but we also know what the possibilities are for what we can do in the future.
And so is this some set of skills that Black Gangshine or yourself could export to other theme parks? Is this like a reusable, I mean, it's Raspberry Pi, so it's a reusable skill, of course. But do you think this is something that other theme parks might have an interest in as well?
I can't speak for any other theme parks. I know Black Gangshine is a small theme park and the budgets aren't huge. And so the innovative use of the Raspberry Pi is absolutely great for them because they can say, oh, we're going to do a themed something this week. Let's get the dinosaurs to do this. Or we're going to do a themed something next week. Let's get the dinosaurs to do that. And so they don't have to get a new consultant in who will say, oh, yes, well, the program's very complex. We can just do it.
That'll be £300,000, please.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if it'll work on a larger scale theme park. Walt Disney's not knocking on my door yet.
I suppose you also get a sort of a level of technology independence from this. You're not then bound to the person who sold you the dinosaurs to rely on them to support you. You can actually just sort of do it yourself as long as you've got the skills.
We could, but we're working with the dinosaur manufacturers suggest maybe they'd like to do it with a Raspberry Pi.
So they
don't just make animatronic dinosaurs. They make a load of other animatronic animals. If we can show them how versatile the Pi is, they may choose to go down that way and use a Pi in all of their animals across the world.
I can see this being useful at Raspberry Pi like events. Like, you know, when people get together and learn about the Raspberry Pi and how to code them, having something in the room, okay, not necessarily a 6-foot dinosaur, but, you know,
something, I'm working on getting a pocket one.
Yeah, exactly. A little pocket dinosaur that can, you know, roar and wag its tail and, you know, open its mouth
it's so
or something
cute.
Like that. That would be awesome. And something, you know, kids or, you know, I would relate to that.
Kids and big kids.
Yes, kids and me would relate to that. That would be awesome.
Yes, it is so much fun.
So did you have to worry about the physical limitations of what each dinosaur could do?
The dinosaurs we were using have effectively their windscreen wiper motors. And
right.
So they're continuous. So it doesn't matter.
Either running or not.
Yes, there's no limit switch. They open the mouth, they close the mouth. And you could actually stop it mid open, or the tail could be to the left or to the right when you actually press stop, but if you don't press anything, it'll just keep wagging.
And are there sensors in there to let you know when the mouth is shut, or is it dependent upon timing, or how could you
there
tell?
There are sensors on some of the motors. We haven't hacked that far yet. We have another hack session due in January, I believe.
Cool.
So if people wanted to get involved in that, are you still looking for more volunteers?
We will have a limit on the numbers that we can actually take, but if anyone would like to email me at blackgang@lucyrogers.com, blackgang@lucyrogers.com, I will add them to the list and let them know what's going on.
It certainly seems like something could be reproduced, you know, elsewhere, even not for the market that you're dealing with, like the theme parks, but just for, getting introduced to hacking on the Pi and Node-RED.
Yes.
So, you know, is this something that you're doing as a, you know, as a day job, or is it something you would share, you know, the tools and the documentation on GitHub or something like that? Is that an eventual goal or not really?
I'm just beginning to think, because I've found out how wonderful this Node-RED is for non-programmers like myself, and there isn't a book out there, I am considering writing something about it.
Ooh.
There's an ooh there. Is that it? Could be cool. Interesting.
Yeah.
We will see how that goes. I have an interesting portfolio career, and this is, you know, hacking dinosaurs is one part of it.
Did you ever think when you were young that you would be hacking dinosaurs at this point in your career?
When I was 18, yes.
Oh, cool. Not what you were expecting, was it, Tony?
I got into engineering because of the Great Egg Race, a BBC.
I loved that programme.
Yeah, BBC programme where they said, right, here's all the equipment that we can use in a lab. Now move this boiled egg from one side, or actually probably a raw egg, from one side of the room to the other without breaking it. And we had a club like that at school. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I also loved all the spitting image puppets, and I wanted to do mechatronics. And then I started doing electronics, and it was all black magic, and I started doing some programming, and that was all black magic. And so I stuck with mechanical.
Excellent.
Cool.
But now it's come to a stage where I understand it, and I don't think that's me. I think that's technology has made it simpler.
So it sounds like these dinosaurs have crossed a number of disciplines. You said you had someone who knew electronics and was able to have a look at the, you know, reverse engineer some of the parts that were in there. And then you've done some work with the Raspberry Pi. And I guess there's some environmental work to enclose these things in a box that's, you know, not going to get the problems that they've had with water ingress previously.
Yeah.
And do you have to, like, pull in skills from lots of other people as well?
Repeat that, please.
Sorry, do you have to pull in skills from lots of other people as well, or is that pretty much everything?
That's one of the delights of working at Black Gang Chine, is that many people are multi-skilled, multi-talented, and we have artists working with the maintenance guys, working with the electricians to actually make things that work on every front, because we can't buy in a complete finished product. Mm-hmm. Often we want something that we can adapt.
Right.
Cool.
It sounds awesome. I'm really glad you've done this, because I took my kids to Black Gang Chine this summer and the sign was up on the T-Rex that said, "I'm sorry, I'm not working at the moment," which, aww, I thought was pretty impressive. Aww. He could use the chalk to write on that.
Despite his little arms.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you very much. I did see a video of some of the projects on Twitter, I think. So I'll try and find that and put a link to that in the show notes, showing the dinosaur.
Great.
But yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, it was lovely talking to you.
Yeah, not a problem. Yeah.
Cheers then.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
It's time for a command line love.
Mm.
And it's a...
yeah, it's a business time.
It's a bumper one. It's a bumper one this time. The command we're going to be talking about first is called Gwake.
Yeah, and it's not actually a command line thing, but it kind of is.
I guess the gwe bit gives away that it might be a gooey thing.
Well,
what is it?
So... do you ever find yourself needing to type a command in a terminal, but don't have a terminal open?
Why, yes, Alan. Sometimes.
Then this is the command for you.
Okay.
So the point of it is that sometimes you need to drop down to the terminal and type a command, but it's not something you want to run. It's not like top, an interactive thing. You just want to fire off a command in a terminal. So, for example, sometimes I want to start a media playback app like VLC with a URL to start streaming, say, NASA TV thing. So I've got the URL in my paste thing, and rather than go and find VLC and then go file, open, and paste in the thing, I know I can just type VLC space and then the URL, hit enter, and it'll work.
Okay.
Now, I don't want to open a terminal to do that, open a brand new terminal window and clutter my desktop with terminal windows.
Sounds dreadful.
That have commands in with loads of output spewing in them. That's just horrid mess.
And then even so, you have to, you know, hit the dash, open the terminal, and then paste it in the terminal, which is just like,
well, or control alt. I mean, you could do control alt T, but still, I don't want to have these cluttering up my machine. So with Gwake, you can run Gwake, and whenever you need a terminal, just for a one-time fire off a command, or maybe longer, you press a key that launches it, and the default is F12. So when I hit F12, I get a terminal pop down onto my screen, as you can see there, but you can't when you're listening, but Laura can, as she's looking at my screen.
Yes.
And it just pops down, and I just paste into there whatever command I want to run, and then press F12 again, and it goes away.
But the shell actually stays running in the background. It's still there.
Yeah, whatever's and running, But I don't clutter my desktop with terminals.
When I press F12, I get Firebug.
Only when you're in Firefox.
Yeah.
Or the equivalent in Chrome.
Well, I am actually in Firefox, but...
How did you not get Firebug then?
Because this is intercepting the key press.
But, yeah, so
but you can change it to anything you like.
You can change it to anything you like. So I have it on pause, because pause doesn't do anything.
So, does the shell session stay...
Yes. So it keeps a history, and you can you can scroll back just like any terminal. It's just a terminal that pops up and goes away when you press the key again. And it's quite nice because you can set things like transparency, and you can set a background color or a background like image, just like you know most terminals do.
But it's can just, you make it look like a 70s green screen monitor?
Yeah, probably.
Cool.
I don't know, but yeah, maybe. but. The nice thing is I don't have these terminals clustering, but it will do tabs as well, so you can have like multiple tabs open.
Oh, right, so you can run multiple shells. Yeah,
and it will respect your shell environment. So if you, like me, I've changed my shell to fish instead of bash, which we talked about a few weeks
ago. Crazy fool.
Yeah, so now when I press F12, I get a fish on my screen.
Why is it called Quake, then? That's a weird name.
Because, I think... I think you know this, and you're asking me this. yeah, so... Long ago, in the dim and distant past, when Tony was playing games like Quake, you know, I know into that.
Yeah.
So as you know, there's the drop-down Quake terminal when you press, I think it's back tick.
Tilde
or back tick, one of those weird keys over there. But you're in the middle of a game. If you want to set something like, I don't know, your, what's that called? The lens thing.
Field of vision.
Field of vision, that's the one. If you want to set it, like, you know. Tony,
yeah.
If you want to set your field of vision,
that I do know.
Then there probably isn't a GUI option for it, so you have to type a command in.
Okay.
But in the game, there's nowhere to type it in, so you press the tilde and you get a drop-down terminal, and then you type something in, and then when you press it again, it goes away.
Right.
So it's for typing commands while you're in a game.
Okay.
So that's why, and because it was first in Quake, I think that's why this is called Quake, because it's like a gnome Quake terminal, I think.
Right.
Well, that's just a guess.
Well, I think we've managed to make that the longest command line love ever.
Well, it's not over yet, because Mark is going to talk about some alternatives to this, with which he is intimately familiar.
Well, I wouldn't
Mark,
I won't go
please
that
start
far.
Talking now.
So,
welcome back, Tony.
Quake, as we were just saying, is the one for gnome. There's also one called Yakquake, which is...
What?
I see where the...
Yakquake.
Right. Why is it called Yakquake? Quake.
Yet another Quake, Quake with a K because it's for KDE. Hey. So this is using an embedded console, which is the KDE terminal emulator, mm-hmm. rather than GNOME terminal.
Awesome. And I did not know Yakquake.
Yes. And that's a lot more, you know, it's kind of, you can tell it's KDE. It like scrolls down from the top. And
does it have a clock?
I don't think it has a clock.
Oh,
okay. You can probably give it a clock.
It's kind of bubbly.
Right.
But yes, I mean, for example, there's even another one called Tilde, which is a sort of...
Isn't that hard to search for?
No, it's not the character Tilde, it's the word, T-L-I-D-A, which is, I think...
T-I-D-E?
No, Tilde.
Tilde. Okay.
I think that it's more better maintained than Quake when I last looked, which is why I ended up using it.
So what do you like about it?
Well, I like just being able to have the shell there whenever I need it, rather than having to launch it and waiting for it to initialize in whichever terminal emulator I'm using.
Yeah, I can see the attraction.
Yeah,
of this
it's just being able to just hit a key and start typing, and then hit enter, and then hit the key again, and it goes away.
Because I only ever need the odd command.
Yeah, and also I can leave I can SSH into my server and have IRC running for IRC, and just have that in the background all the time, and just. You know, hit a key when I want to read it.
In the background? What are you talking about? IRC should be in the foreground of the screen all the time.
IRC.
You should have a dedicated 1080p screen just showing you IRC.
So yes, if I get a notification on my phone, then I can just hit a key and see what the message is.
Oh, yeah. Neat. So there you go, Tony. You need to do that too.
You could just hit Control-Alt-F1. That brings up a terminal.
Yeah, but then that takes a few seconds to switch between.
And yes.
Yes.
No.
Oh dear.
There's no screensaver on Control-Alt-F1.
Oh yeah, true. It goes blank.
No, I mean, when someone comes up to your machine, they press Control or F1 and they can...
Yeah,
to your machine.
Yeah, yeah, they
so
can.
It's a ridiculous idea, too.
So you can't lock it.
Yeah, I feel ashamed of myself.
Welcome back, as I say.
Yeah, thanks.
Your lack of security consciousness.
Yeah.
So yes, Quake.
Okay, let's give that a go.
I'll try it.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If there's something you think we should talk about or someone we should talk to, tweet at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. And remember, if we don't hear from you, we might not have enough content. And that can only mean one thing, more quizzes. That's all for this episode. Thank you for listening. The next live show will be on Wednesday, the 3rd of December at 8:30 in the evening. 8:30 to those of you who speak with
that
way.
Did you just say Wednesday the 3rd of December?
I did, because that's what it says on the screen in front of me.
I'm sure you mean Wednesday the 10th of December.
He does.
The 10th, yes, that's what I mean.
Yes. And in fact, that will be the last live show of season 7, will it not?
It will. We realised this about an hour ago, just before we started this.
So there won't be a pantomime this year.
So if you want to get any feedback to us, you need to do that now, before December the 10th, or there will be more quizzes. I guarantee it.
Yeah.
And as usual, we'll be doing our annual roundup of predictions and making new predictions. So if you want to send us your predictions for the coming year in open source technology, Linux, Ubuntu, whatever.
Or anything else.
Then, you know, email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org.
Gosh, was it only a year ago we last did that?
Yes, only a year since you've been so wrong.
Gosh, it's going to be good fun preparing that, because I like going back over the things that we said would happen. And
I have no idea.
No, I can't remember what I said either.
Year of the desktop problem.
I think you might have said there'll be an Ubuntu phone out.
Yeah, I think I might have done that, yeah.
Oh dear.
And I was really confident about that. Yeah. Well, we'll see. It's not the end of the year yet.
You've got 2 weeks.
Maybe Meizu will surprise us with their strategic agreements.
Yeah. Here it is, folks.
And we're done.
Yeah.
Right. Just one more.
Yeah, just one more. So hopefully you'll be able to join us live next time. If not, you enjoy the downloads. And it's been an interesting hour or so. It's
been an interesting year or so.
Wow, yeah. The year has gone very fast.
It has.
Yes. Right, okay. Well, thank you for listening, everybody, and we'll speak to you next time.
All right.
Cheers then.
Bye-bye. Bye.